Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work. So, thank you, wonderful people, for joining us. I would like to begin by welcoming our fabulous guest of The Work. It's Jen Potten. Yay! Welcome, Jen. Thank you so, so much for joining us today. I'm so happy to share this time with you.
Me too. It's my pleasure.
Yay! So, Jen, tell us a little bit about yourself. You first came into my life, I know, in person when I traveled to New York in 2011 and we got to work together face to face. You had emailed me before through my old column at Actors Access, so you had been on my radar and I was clearly aware of your work and your a little bit of your journey. But I understand that you knew about me quite a bit before that. How did the self-management for actors world pop on your radar, if you recall?
So it was my sophomore year of college, and it was the winter. So I guess you had just started working for writing the show fast column. And I was only taking one class, and I'm from Jersey, and I went to school in Jersey. And I was twiddling my thumbs while it's snowing outside, and I'm like, I wonder what real actors do while I'm getting this theater degree. And so I guess I must have Googled it, and I found your column. And then I found all of these articles that I had missed, and I just started filling my 20-year-old head with all of your insight at that point. And so I did a whole bunch of SMFA work while I was still in undergrad, because while I had time off, I was getting on these listservs, you know, actively submitting myself on Actors Access and backstage and through, like, Jagger K's old listserv in New York, which your New Yorkers might remember. And I was getting auditions, and you know, they were for like teeny weeny shows that were way, way out in the nooks and crannies of like Brooklyn at 10 o'clock for no pay. But it was definitely what real actors were doing. So it gave me a great foundation at a time where, you know, there was really a big hole where all of the business know-how was in my undergrad education.
So, and you got your theater degree from?
Ramapo College of New Jersey.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. So cool. So tell me about your initial creative spark, because in choosing that as your degree path, obviously it had been something that was in your life and on your radar for some time. You were going to pursue a creative career. Where do you remember what that first spark was?
There are a lot of pictures of me as a very young child, just kind of anything that could and would be in the spotlight, anything that could and would make people laugh. It was happening. Like, all of these pictures of me with, like, the Starla microphone. She was a little doll that you'd plug a microphone in, and it was like a robot voice, but you could sing through her. Keyboards that I couldn't play. My grandmother's square dancing skirts that were, like, you know, these giant sheets on me. But any chance I got to dress up or sing or perform or just, you know, kind of goof off and do shtick, I was into it. So I wanted to be an actor or at least a performer. Pretty much from day one, minus like a week where I thought I wanted to be a veterinarian. And then when I found out how much school it took, I was like, oh no, never mind. So now I just have a dog.
Right. Because then I could love animals, but not have to go through all that.
Right. Totally.
Take me through your journey a little bit, Jen. So like, when did it formalize for you and become less about, I want to be in the spotlight and I'm just having fun dressing up and lighting up through the storytelling process, to something that became a little more structured for you?
I think in elementary school, I started taking dance classes, and our recitals had a lot of drama mixed in with them. So like, one year when I was maybe 11 or 12, our recital was Grease. So we had this whole dance to Summer Lovin', but it was also highly theatrical, you know? And that was really my first experience on stage proper. And I was like, ooh, I like this. I like getting to tell stories. I always loved storytelling. I loved writing really horrible stories that I will probably take to Mortified. I loved reading. I was an avid reader because I had like no friends. Oh, that's also probably another thing. I had no friends, seriously.
So I don't believe it for a second.
Oh my God. Until I was like 14, I had one friend and she didn't even go to my school. I swear to God. But you know, there was a very active inner life. There was a very active imagination. And I think just sort of getting to experience relationships from that place probably had a lot to do with it too. And then when I made friends and it became more of a social experience too, it was like, oh, great, we can all craft this together and it's a communal thing. And I just really liked connecting with people, you know?
Jen, that's sort of. I heard you mention something that I've long been fascinated with. This first came into my world years ago. I want to make sure everyone knows about this. You mentioned mortified.
I did. I went last night.
Okay, tell me everything.
Okay, so Mortified is a project, I think they're in their 14th or 15th year now, actually. But I've only known about them since I saw the Mortified Nation documentary on Netflix a couple years ago. So the principle of Mortified is basically a public forum, kind of like The Moth. It is storytelling, but it's all 100% real, recorded entries either from diaries or journals or live journals or poems or songs, etc., that are super duper embarrassing from when you were young, usually like pre-adolescent through, for some people, in college too. And it's beautiful. So you can go to these live events all over the country, actually internationally now too.
Oh, cool.
You can go to these live events and they might have five or six presenters who come up. And the coolest thing is that a lot of them are not performers. So, you know, it's delightful to see these people who are otherwise maybe not so ready to share, come up and expose this super crazy, vulnerable piece of themselves. But I mean, like, last night, I went with one of my oldest friends from high school, and I dragged him, and he was like, you know, this is going to be terrifying for everyone. And I was like, yeah, that's why we're going. Yeah. there was a guy who read this super angsty story that he wrote when he was 17, and he read it in like a Batman voice, and it was so good. It was so good. I was crying. There was a girl who wrote songs that were really deep and dark, and basically it was just like die, 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 death, death, death. It was so good. So you can go to the live shows. You can also, I would recommend that anyone who doesn't know about it start with the documentary on Netflix, because you can watch it in your living room and you'll laugh and cry and probably want to do something about it. And they also have a podcast, which I have been listening to nonstop. And they basically cull the best tidbits from all of the international shows, and then they connect with the storyteller once more to kind of get a little bit of a closure on it. So I have been culling my own stuff, and I submitted, and I'm really excited for the producers to talk to me soon.
I saw one of the photos you had put up on your Instagram, I think, of a little snippet from one of your childhood journals or teen journals.
Yep.
Terrifying.
I know. And I'm looking through this and I'm like, oh my God. But it's like, that's what I'm drawn to. You know? I think this whole element, especially because, like, you know, my swan song is kind of like underdogs unite, underdogs find your worth. And this is the epitome of that.
Let's talk about that a little bit. How important as an artist do you feel that it is to have a regular workout or a place to sort of push the edge a little, especially when it comes to what you feel your storytelling truth on this planet is all about?
I think that's incredibly important. You know, having these outlets for you to kind of test and see what message you really want to get out, and like, you know, what's that special thing you're going to bring to every single regular job that you get when CBS hires you, when Fox hires you, when Miramax hires you, even if you're just the girl in the coffee shop, what's that special thing that you're going to deliver? And you get to live in that when you work out, when you have a really great class you love, or you have an artist collective that sings to you, or you have your own self-produced projects. And like, I mean, doing that for me has been incredibly fulfilling because I kind of just get to live in the weird underdog place.
Let's talk about that. Tell me about some of the things that you've created and what drives you to continue to create in between the times that all those big guys are coming around and hiring you. And then I want to talk a little bit about some of the big guys that are coming around and hiring you and what that feels like.
What inspires me to keep creating is just that it's really fun and it feels really good. Because, you know, when you're doing that thing that you love so much without anybody else's hands in the pot, as it were, at least not investor-wise, I mean, it's so fulfilling. I've been working on a feature film for the last, 2 years. I've been co-writing with a friend of mine, and it's a summer comedy, and it's very much, it's very much mortified, you know, reflecting on childhood, reflecting on teenage years and sort of how you move through it and how you move through that, all those insecurities coming up, even if you're in your 30s and 40s. And it's, I love doing that. That's really good. And more dominantly, I'm in the fourth season of my web series, The Weirdos Next Door. It's about weirdos that live next door to each other. But the best part and the most notable part, I think, is that it stars me and it stars a bunch of puppets. I mean, basically, think your standard issue Henson puppets. Thanks, guys. Think you're standard puppets, but we make all of our own. Well, I can't even say we. My co-creator, Kay, she's insanely talented, and she has, by the blood, sweat, and tears of her own hands, she's created our entire cast of puppets, and we voice and operate all of them, and so it's really, it's fun. It's just this giant melting pot of underdogs and nostalgia that feels so good to just live in all the time.
And where can everybody get more information about that series in particular, Jen?
You can go to theweirdosnextdoor.com, and from there on out, it'll have all our videos, our about, you can subscribe, easy peasy.
What have you learned most in the four seasons thus far? As far as whether it's on the producing end or as an on-camera entertainer, what anywhere in between, what has been so far the biggest takeaway?
The biggest takeaway is I can friggin' do it. Because straight up, Vaughn, we don't even hire a crew, which is not to say that we wouldn't, but we never crowdfunded. We never did a lot of the things that people do to then get the money to make a shoot for a week. So we invested in the camera and invested in some pop-up lights and eventually invested in a soundboard, thank God. But we've really, the three of us together have been our own crew, directors, DP, gaffers. It's crazy, but it's also been so illuminating for me. I mean, just knowing that I have those skills is wonderful. Should I need to step in that capacity later on? And it's, I mean, to know that we can make, to know that you can make something that looks like what we're making right now on your own, and you don't have to go through those giant hurdles that we all assume we have to go through. You can, and they're great, but you don't have to. So empowering.
Awesome.
You know? You just do it. I just go to their house and we just do it. Done.
Love it. So empowering. I love that. Tell us about some of the other folks that are coming around these days. And if you want to take us back a few years to some of those first big wins, I think that would inspire a lot of folks listening about how that journey starts to turn a little bit from that fully self-managed, on the hustle, looking for those, you talked a little bit about those first submissions through Backstage or at Actors Access, and I'm sure going to various auditions all over the boroughs, and how does that then shift to those first experiences of, oh wow, this is what we call a tier jump, this is something that definitely feels different. Take us through that a little bit.
So when I was first out of college, I was really sort of figuring my stuff out, maybe for 2 or 3 years in terms of submitting to the lower tier theater, submitting to, student films, stuff like that, getting some of those under my belt. And And the reasoning I was giving myself in my head, I was making it so circuitous for myself. And so instead of being goal focused, I was path focused, and I imposed a whole lot of steps on that path that were unnecessary. So I was like, well, if I do this children's show in Queens at 8 a.m. on Sundays, then maybe an agent will notice me. Then maybe I can get my first off-Broadway show. Then maybe I will get some press. Then maybe I can audition for TV. So like it just extended massively. And eventually I knew that I wanted to get to TV, and I was like, oh, it's all the way over there. And I did a marketing workshop with Dallas Travers, and I told her what my goal was. And she's like, well, why are you doing this? And I was like, oh,
so, light bulb.
But I think where the woo-woo comes in is that there was only maybe a month's worth of time where I made that internal shift. And then a month later, I got my first big TV job, which was 30 Rock, which was crazy pants. Because I hadn't even yet implemented, you know, all of the minutia and the administrative involved in that.
It's like you had become so systems oriented that you even in making that shift mentally and emotionally and even spiritually, you still thought, but I don't yet have the system for that.
Right. And I was like, how is this happening?
And it happens because you made the shift. The system becomes much less relevant.
Totally. And I just realigning my path that way, it started to attract in a ton of stuff. And like, the lulls came after that.
Sure.
I immediately booked 30 Rock. I immediately booked my first Law & Order SVU. And then there was like 6 months of crickets. And I definitely had gremlins come in. And I was like, oh no, did I get it wrong? Was I not supposed to be doing this? And that's where then my systems did come into play and then ramped up that momentum. And things were basically to the point where I was booking maybe 2 co-stars a year, really until I'd say 2014, I booked my first big, big, big guest star. And, it was top of show. It was the entire episode was centered around my character. She was not Polish at all. And, it had come to my attention that the show, it was on Blue Bloods, it had come to my attention that the show needed a woman who looked like me, and she needed to do a Polish accent. And I didn't have one in my back pocket, but I was like, I can do that. Done. So I talked to my agent, and I'm like, hey, they're looking for this. Can we push? And she's like, yeah. So she pushes me. And then it's, again, they're still looking for this girl. And I'm like,
what kind of timeline are we talking here in this first seeing the breakdown, asking for the push, and then the coming back?
3 days, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. So I see it again, maybe the next day after I ask her for it. And I'm like, can you, they're still looking for this. Can we pitch on this? And she's like, yeah. So it gets me in the door again with this office that I've never been in for. And I blew it out of the park. And I booked it, and I worked for the whole week on this show. And it was my first, thanks guys, it was my first top of show guest star. And it was wonderful. And that kind of opened up the floodgates for a lot of work to come in. All of 2015, I was working. I booked like 10 jobs. It was batshit.
It's insane.
It was great. I was incredibly thankful for it, especially because last year I went through a devastating loss. My dad died at the beginning of the year, and I was very raw and very in it. And I had worked on NBC's miniseries, The Slap, right before the end of the year. So I think right before I had gone into like hospice care. And I did one episode, and they let me know, well, we might want to bring you back. We might want to have you recur. And I was like, that's great. And then everything happened. And then in February, my team was like, if you're up for it, they would like to have you come back. And I was like, yes, that is exactly what I need right now, because everything else is horrible. So you know what? If NBC wants me to come back, I'll come back. And like that, I really think it's beautiful, that ebb and flow, this like massive yin yang. It gave me something to be incredibly grateful for, because and then to appreciate it all the more because like life had changed, your perspective just changes.
I love hearing you talk about gratitude and appreciation in particular, Jen. And I'm wondering if you could share a bit on how you find balance with those ebbs and flows, because a lot of people find it one of the more crazy making parts of our creative industry and find it challenging to come to grips with that unpredictable part of the journey. And you've found a place to be incredibly grateful for it and appreciative of it. Can you talk a bit about your regular practices for balance?
Oh my God. Well, I have like a bomb shelter's worth of stockpiled gratitude and like stuff to do when the gremlins creep in.
Okay.
Because it's so helpful. And I think that the number one piece of advice that has been soothing my soul for years that I leaned on way back when I first had this sort of dearth of work and I was like, wait, so what happened? And I learned the mantra, I'm right on time all of the time. My life unfolds in miraculous ways. And like just trusting your timeline is so hugely important because you don't know what life is making room for. You know, internally, externally, is stuff going to happen with friends? Are you going to be more home focused? Are you going to, fall in love? Are you going to deepen relationships? Are you going to shuck away things from your life? So much room has been made by that. That's like shedding people, shedding negativity, shedding things that are not right for you. You have to remember that you are a human being first and foremost. And because of that, your entire person, your entire spirit and soul have to come first. I also keep a gratitude journal and I write as many days as I can remember. I write most days. I write 5 gratitudes and I write 3 successes from the previous day. And they could be anything. They could be like, took a shower. They could be, I taught the dog how to lie down and he actually did it. Like they could be, I nailed my audition, like whatever it is. And then you end it with like a manifestation, sort of whatever you want to call into your life. And I think staying grateful and staying present and really remembering that whatever is happening right now is supposed to happen. So it's not dead because something's wrong with you. Like it's dead because, okay, maybe you just have to let go of this one thing and focus elsewhere. Like maybe I'm not getting all the meetings I want to get, so I'm going to go to Mortified instead and hang out with an old friend and, do this really important thing for my soul.
Love it. Yeah. That's fantastic advice, Jen. Thank you. Let me engage in a little bit of brand prov.
Yeah.
Okay, so for those who don't know, brand prov is where we just charge in with some rapid fire questions that you are prepared to answer on brand. And when I say prepared, it just means in the way that we improvise on brand, you are prepared because, of course, you live on brand and live in the world of exactly how to answer anything that comes your way. And I'm not going to try and like trick you or throw you. I'm just going to try and have some fun and get that brewing a little bit. So here we are. In this moment of time, tell me what it is that would be your on-brand go-to theme music as you walk through life.
Probably Walking on Sunshine.
Right? Perfect. Perfect. Fantastic. So you get invited to the Emmys in a few months. Who's your date for the red carpet?
Andrew, 100%.
Tell us who 100%. Andrew is.
Andrew is my husband. He is my favorite person on the planet. Probably seconded only by you. He's just the light of my life and my best friend, and we have a blast everywhere, and I adore him.
Fantastic. Tell me the role you are meant to play somewhere in your future, and it can be near future or distant future, that you just know is a story that is yours to tell.
I think that something not dissimilar to like Never Been Kissed but on TV. I absolutely feel in my bones. It is a half hour long running sitcom, probably on NBC. I love my folks at NBC.
I was gonna say, you're very loyal to your NBC folks. I love it.
They've hired me more than anyone else. Bring it on. So I feel like a half an hour sitcom on NBC with me starring as someone who, for whatever reason, has to be thrust back into the high school, terrifying oof, and, you know, figuring my stuff out even after I've become like a successful, fairly, you know, confident adult.
Oh, I love that for you. And I love the specificity with which you answered that. Oh, that's fantastic. I'm betting that's been in your manifestation list.
That and Paul Feig.
Yeah, obviously. Of course. And now I was actually going to ask, who's the showrunner or director or producer in your life that most needs to know you exist?
Yes, 1,000%. And he does, which is delightful. So we just have to work together. Also learned, he has done Mortified. I read his books. They're all about teenage angst and terrifying, embarrassing stuff. Like, he's my favorite.
So Paul Feig knows you exist. How? Tell me what you did.
Paul Feig initially knows that I exist from Twitter. I did a really ballsy as hell campaign for my 30th birthday years ago. And I made a video where I introduced myself to him, put it unlisted on YouTube. And for my birthday, I emailed my friends and I Facebooked my friends, etc. And I was like, hey, I'm doing this 30th birthday campaign to get in touch with Paul Feig and just to tell him how much I adore him and that I would love to work together. If you're into it, here are some tweets that you can do. You can retweet, you can favorite, whatever. And people came out in masses, in droves. There were like 300 of my friends who yes-anded the shit out of it. And, you know, who not only like put in my tweets that I had initially made for them, but also were like, hey, my friend Jen Ponson loves you and you need to cast her because she's perfect for your stable of actors. And it was wonderful. And afterwards, after talking to you, you were like, okay, here's how to ninja step number two. And so I wrote him a letter from my heart that was super professional, but also vulnerable and, you know, deeply connected. And I wrote him a letter and I've sent him updates on my career and congratulatory letters since. And when he did Other Space, I was called in for one of the leads.
What I love about this is that it's, without giving away how many years ago it was, is it's long haul in scope, in that you weren't looking for, let's get this tweet out and make sure he sees the video and then I'm expecting results instantaneously. And even still, you've been called in. You've not yet had that fated lovers meet intersection.
Yes. Although, to be frank, I did meet him before I did that thing. I met him for a moment because he did this amazing talk back at 92nd Street Y. And I got a ticket because I was so excited. And he was just wonderful. He's just a wonderful human being and so genuine and just cares about all the same stuff that I care about. And I met him afterwards and I gave him a hug and I was like, I think so much of you. This was great. So it was after that that I was like, oh yeah, this person is 100% my person. I super have to work with him.
Well, and I love that focus on wanting to work with good people, wanting to connect with storytellers who don't just have a voice that, you know, might be shining a light on things that feels good to you storytelling wise, but that these are people that you know you would want to spend time with.
Totally. And you know how important that is. Like 16 hours on set, you'd better be with your people. Like if we're doing this to have fun and we're doing this because we love it, we may as well continue to love it because we're not working with a bunch of assholes.
Right. Exactly. Life's too short. That's crazy.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, don't sign up for that. It's too much. I always say drama costs extra. That if you're a producer that needs a lot of drama and you need me as a casting director to have to put out fires, so you're going to create fires just so I have to put them out, that's fine. But my rate just doubled because I,
ow.
Mama got no time. I'll do it. I will do the drama. It just costs more. All right. So Jen, before we wrap up and go into Q&A, if anybody here on the live broadcast has questions and wants to jump in and ask, I want to know specifically, what do you have coming up that we need to be on the lookout for?
Well, for those of you who have not already binge watched all of it, I just had a machine gun release of 3 major streaming platforms. I just did season 2 of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. I just did season 3 of Deadbeat on Hulu, which, you know, is a lesser known gem, but it's so good. And I have season 3 of Orange is the New Black coming out in just a couple weeks in June.
Tell me how it feels to do all this new platform, and I hesitate to even call it new platform anymore because this really is where we're headed. How does it feel to have so much love from these platforms?
It's wonderful because not for nothing, I got my eyes on the prize when I start pitching Weirdos Next Door. I know that that is where I want it to be. But also, like, it's so lovely because it's so much more accessible and people can watch intentionally. And well, there's not that, oh, hey, you were on Law and Order. It was in the background. It was on in the kitchen. Like, people can watch it anytime. It's not, oh, I don't have this channel and then I missed it, or, you know, and just to have the access is lovely. And definitely the broad scope of people is humbling because, you know, most of your friends at this level, I have more friends now that watch Netflix regularly than CBS, for example.
Well, I also feel that there's something about the quality of viewership that it goes to what you said about how Law and Order was just on the background in the kitchen and I walked through and, oh, there you were. This intentional viewing that happens in this world of the Netflix and the Hulu and Amazon, you know, we're not just passively flipping through and, oh, that was on, so I decided not to change the channel. This is, I went in and asked for it, and I asked for it on my gadget, which is an incredibly intimate setting versus TV on in the background in the family home. I think even if it gets lower viewership, the viewership is more intently focused and intensely interested. And I think that goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's exciting.
It is. It's so exciting. And I love that you're thinking forward toward your own series and how you're going to pitch it into these types of spaces, because that really is the right fit for it. If we stay up and involved with you, Jen, where do we go? Tell us your website, your social media, any place that we could make sure that we keep up with you going forward.
I'm very involved on Twitter at Jen Ponton. Same on Instagram. I post a lot of pictures of my dog, and he's super cute. So there's that. And my website is jenponton.com.
Awesome.
I have an email newsletter that goes out every month. And if you want to sign up there, you can do that, and I'll send you fun little letters.
Oh, good, good, good. I love a monthly newsletter. That's fantastic. And we can get on that at jenponton.com. Great. I don't see any questions coming in, so I will not continue dragging to check. I always do this, like, I want to hold long enough just in case somebody's slow on the typing or wants to pop in here. And it looks like we do have Hong joining us. So good. I'm glad I stalled. It's like, what's the balance between how long to stall and then when it just gets like, no, nobody's coming. Awesome. Hong, welcome. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I hope you're not hearing the blow dryer in the background. It just came right. I wanted to ask the Q&A. Perfect. So I found your experiences and your gratitude very inspiring. I have found also just by being grateful, having a gratitude journal, either by writing or by saying to yourself every day, oh, I'm thankful that it has brought a lot of opportunities. So I'm glad that you shared that. It's just confirmed, great, I am doing what I'm doing and, you know, I'm on the right track and it is attracting what I want to attract, you know, as opportunities. So I really enjoyed your experience with the showrunner, and I was like, oh, because I've been thinking, how can I get in touch with the showrunner that I love to work with? Just like, you know, think. And my question is, before you met the showrunner at 92 and why, did you do any research before that, like trying to Twitter or sending or some sort of conversation with the showrunner before meeting in person, and what advice you'd have or tips to connect with the showrunner that you wish you have done in the beginning, for example.
Definitely. For Paul Feig, he's been on my radar for a very long time, really ever since Freaks and Geeks when I was in high school, and I was like, oh my God, I love this series. And then he got back in the groove and he was making Bridesmaids, and that was a humongous hit. And when I found out about that, I sort of checked him out again on Twitter, and the relationship, or at least my efforts into the relationship, began there. You know, liking tweets, retweeting him, supporting him, sending him good juju, and then looking up really everything that he's done in this time that's elapsed since I was last aware of the work that he was doing that I loved. You know, on IMDb Pro and stuff like that. But I think the best way to go for it that exists right now would be for you to start that conversation on Twitter. And it doesn't start with any asks is, I think, the important thing, because as I'm sure Bonnie would attest, really the wrong way to go on it would be, hi, I'm an actor and I really want to be on your show. Because that's what they're getting from everyone, even people who are not actors, right? So what you want to come at it as is a collaborator, is someone who swims in the same pool as they do. And so you can, you know, CC them and mention them on tweets for, like, let's say it was Shonda Rhimes. You could mention her on certain articles that are about, like, women kicking ass in film and television, or like a special summit for the WGA or something that's all about women showrunners, or something that's about, you know, just how the nature of dramas has changed because of Shondaland, and be like, way to go, Shonda Rhimes. And then, you know, anything that she posts, you could reply to that. If she posts a picture of her dog, you could be like, oh my God, I used to have a Maltese. His name was Crackers or whatever. You know, just add value and be a collaborator, be an equal, truly, in a human sense, right? You're not posing as an A-lister, but you are certainly owning your worth as a human and as an artist. And just not coming at it from, like, the angle of, what can you give me? What can I do? Like, even if Paul Feig was like, I'll hire you, but I have no money, I'd be like, awesome, I want to play. Great. You know?
Right. Does that help? Yes. And my other question is, what if the showrunner isn't on Twitter? What would be your tips to find a showrunner other than, like, Googling and reading interviews and finding out where he or she hangs out, for example?
Definitely. In the way of hanging out, I'd be careful with that, because you wouldn't want it to be, you know, a sort of lurky, creepy situation. But you could, for example, let's say Shonda was not on Twitter and she wasn't on Instagram or really any platform where you can kind of commune. Facebook is getting better with that too, right, Bon? Like, for their public pages, with them having some access to it. But if she wasn't using any kind of social media, then you could go to IMDb Pro and look up her production company and see if there was an address for it. And if there is, you can then write her a letter that states why her work is important to you and what she has inspired in you. And you can, yes, definitely then let her know, I am an actor, this is some information about me. I would love for the opportunity to collaborate with you in the future. And then let that be. So that's out there in the universe. And then, you know what? If you think, if Shonda wins an Emmy, you can then send her a congratulatory card to that same address, right? So it's kind of just finding some way to add value to their world. That's the method that I have found is most helpful to me, you know, for me, and hopefully for the way that they view me.
And this is where I would, yes, and everything Jen has said, to say your Google alerts are going to lead you pretty far with this sort of thing as well, Hong, because you're able to set up Google alerts on someone who maybe doesn't have a big social media presence, but then you'll get alerts when this person is going to be speaking at any event that you're able to attend, even as a non-member. You know, like the Writers Guild Foundation, for example, regularly, and Directors Guild and Producers Guild, not just the SAG-AFTRA Foundation, host events where non-members can attend for a fee. And SAG-AFTRA Foundation will sometimes host events to which non-members are welcome as a plus one of a member. You get an early alert about these events going on calendars, and then just always have your go-to person that is your way in if you're not yet in that union, or you have that 10 bucks ready to pay to go to the panel discussion that non-members can pay to attend. And there are going to be ways to continue to interweave. And over the course of many years, that familiarity does start to pay off.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for hopping on.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for sharing all your ninja tips, Jen. It's really been very interesting and inspiring. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Jen, on that, let's actually end with that. With what ninja tip would you say, if you could distill it to one, has been your favorite? And we'll stop there.
I think the most important one, and definitely my go-to, is trust your timing. And so if you feel like you're doing everything you can and you're getting frustrated and something's not giving, you know what? Maybe you need to find something else. Either way, just put your joy first, trust your timing.
I love that. Put your joy first. Yes, I think the word joy, yep, is at the top of my whiteboard right over there in the office. It is.
There you go.
Woo! And I dotted the J with a star because I'm like, joy.
I love that.
Beautiful. Fantastic way to end things. Jen Ponton, thank you so much for joining me on The Work.
Thanks for having me, Vaughn.
Of course, sweetheart. I appreciate you so, so much.
I appreciate you immensely.
Thank you. All right. Until next time, everybody. Stay ninja and keep creating. Mwah. All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja. Mwah.